You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Hey, y'all. Today's guest is a true drag legend.
A queen whose career...
Whose
reign spans multiple decades from the old school to the front lines of the new school.
Jeffrey Roberson, a.k.a. Varla Jean Merman, has been electrifying audiences with a multi-octave vocal range and multi-layered comedy from coast to coast in a prolific series of acclaimed solo shows, as well as collaborations with a wide variety of artists.
From summertime Provincetown parodies with Jinx Monsoon and Peaches Christ, to Richard Day's cult hit film Girls Will Be Girls with Coco Peru and Jack Plotnick, Varla is always a smash.
Jeffrey is coming in to chat about the original cast album of The Mad Show.
Stephen Sondheim fans will be familiar with The Mad Show for his lyrics under the pen name Esteban Del Rio on the Mary Rogers tune The Boy From, originally performed by Linda Lavin and since covered by many comedians.
Including this girl. Wait, who?
You.
I've never performed The Boy From.
But you should. It would be a very good song for you.
Oh, this is how you tell me.
What else should I tell you?
I love. I was actually thinking, I was...
you need some new special material.
Yeah, well, on the plane, going home for Christmas, my little American Airlines TV wasn't working, so I had to, like, you know, find something else to occupy my 2 hours. So I made a short list of the songs that I might want to put in an upcoming show, and I need to send them to you. And then I listened to all of them and arranged them in the order I think they should be in. And so, you know, I'm trying to set intentions for 2020, maybe get back on that stage,
yes,
you know?
Yes,
walk
yes.
down that staircase again.
Yes.
Find an empty lap to sit in, yes. fellas.
But more importantly, let's talk about your cabaret show. did you go, I'm sure you didn't, to Club Coming last night?
No. You know what? I love Club Coming so much, but and there was a period of several months where I went every Monday, and I loved it, and I made so many friends, but that place is just too small. I need it to be a little bigger. It's just very cramped.
So now we are using our podcast not only to forget to plug the venues that we owe plugs to, but to critique other venues.
No. I love it. I need more of it. It's a very small space and I get claustrophobic. Anyway.
I mean, it's not that small. It's just narrow.
It's very narrow.
So is the duplex.
It's very narrow.
But people don't walk through the house at the duplex to go to the bathroom.
Right, that's the thing.
But they don't really do that while you're performing like a ticketed event there.
That's true, but yeah.
Like you can't compare the experience there of the open mic Mondays in the club with Lance to...
Sure, sure. I don't think I've ever actually seen
Didn't you see Jack Barthelay's show there?
No, I saw it at Pangea.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about Pangea? You could do your show there. That's a really cool space.
Yeah,
too.
I like Pangea. The thing I don't like about Pangea though is that it seems
again with the critiquing. Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Okay, we'll cut all this.
I don't want to start paying cover charges. No, this is real. This
truth.
Is real.
I just
this is my truth.
The thing about Pangea is
I don't want to pay cover charges. Is my truth.
Is that it feels very much like a restaurant and less like an audience stage space. You know, it feels more of like like you're going to eat dinner and there's just someone singing.
I mean, honestly, to me, they all feel that way. Like, I mean, even like 54 Below, which I think is so fabulous. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, besides Joe's Pub, it's the only cabaret venue that was actually designed to be used as that. It's not just a restaurant or mm-hmm. bar or mm-hmm. hotel, whatever, that was converted. That said, I don't understand, you know, why they design these venues where you're sitting at a table that has your back to the stage. You know, some people complain when they redid Joe's Pub. I think this is before your time. I don't know if you were ever at the old mm-mm, Joe's Pub. Mm-mm. But it used to be more like that in a way. And then, you know, now they have those, like, long bars, not just the back row, but the second to back row, where there's just, like, single seats against that railing.
And I love that. Yeah.
I love that. And some people are like, but now it's, like, a showroom. I'm like, it's a room where they do shows. What should it be like?
It's, like, better than watching TV, you know? It's, like...
It should all be that. You know, there's... People have this fantasy, I think, of, like...
The old school
supper clubs, right? You know, where, like...
Ricky Ricardo.
Yeah, exactly. Ricky Ricardo's playing, and you're just, like, at your table, like, having your dinner conversation while there's, like, you know... ambient music.
Yeah.
But it isn't that. You pay money to go see a performance, and you sit there quietly and you watch it. Everybody does that.
And
therefore,
places.
You should be seated in a way that is conducive to you enjoying the experience.
And especially places like 54 Below and Joe's Pub, it's like, those places have these huge stars that come and perform. It's like, you're not just going to, like, have a night out, whoever the talent may be. It's like, you're going to see Bridget Everett, you're going to see Justin Bond.
And this is why I love the Provincetown Art House so much. Because in both of their spaces there, they're basically, like, set up, like, they probably are, like, old school. I think it was an art house movie theater originally.
Yes.
So it's raked seating. Mm-hmm. So there are no bad seats. Wherever you're sitting at the art house in P-Town, you can see very easily over the people in front of you. Mm-hmm. It's theater-style seating.
There's cup holders
and there's cup holders, so you can still have your life.
There's a bar out back, so you literally can just go get a beer, bring it into the theater.
Yes.
I mean, I was going to say the only thing that would make it better if there was, like, waiter
service.
But that, I don't even think that, because then you would be distracted and, you know, they would be reaching over everyone.
I don't mind it. I mean, like, maybe for, like, a Judy Kuhn show, you wouldn't want, like, waiter service. But, like, if I'm seeing, like, Varla, I'm very happy.
Very
you know.
True.
I mean, drag queens, like, you know, comedy queens are so often, like, are dealing with, like, active audience anyway.
Right,
and audience participation and talking back. You know, they're used to it. I mean...
So this brings up an interesting point.
I'm sorry, if Barbara Cook could sing at the Carlisle and waiters are coming in and out...
Yes.
...then it's good enough for, you know, Trixie Mattel.
Yeah. This brings up an interesting point talking about... Provincetown, and this is our special Winter and Summertown mini season. So, you know, we when we go to Fire Island, we love the beach so much, and that's, I mean, truly right now, that's all I'm looking forward to
all
in
I'm
this
looking
life.
Forward to. For all I've been blessed with in this life. That's Bed of Roses.
Oh, I need to take that.
You're like, didn't sound like it.
I'm like,
let the world stop turning. Let the sun stop burning. Let them tell me love's not worth going through.
Ooh. Oh, honey, don't I know it. I just joined Hinge last night. Okay, put a pin in that. Hold on. Put a Hinge
Sorry,
in that.
Sorry, I interrupted you with my song styling.
But no, talking about Fire Island, it's like, I love the beach so much, and I'm like, we always talk about, like, begin the begin. It's like, down by the, what is the lyric?
Down by the shore, an orchestra's playing. I want that. Where is that?
It's like, I want that, and I want, like, a little, you know, like, the pool at Provincetown. They have the waiters, you know, the little European twinks who come by and take your order and bring you towels and stuff. I love that, but I'm like, would that create a weird thing in Fire Island that would take away from what makes it special, which is that it is so, the nature of it all, like the seclusion and the paradisical, I don't know how to say it. Like, it's like a paradise that's not commercial, you know? I mean, it is very expensive, but it's so special because it's like, you're just one with the Mother Earth ocean.
I mean, it's funny. Like, I always wish that I could be lying on the beach and have waiters bringing me things. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, like, so rare because I think in most places you're not allowed to serve alcohol on the beach.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it's not worth it to them. They can't make enough money with, I mean, I spend enough money on Pellegrino and Diet Coke.
Non-alcohol.
If everybody were like me.
Yeah.
But, in general, they can't make enough money if there's not alcohol sales. So I think that's why it's rare to find that.
Sure.
But it would be a different vibe. I mean,
or maybe even just like on certain days or like weekends or something. But,
well, somebody should have a concession. I mean, when I was a kid, I don't know if they still have this, but we used to go to the beach in LA. We would go to, I don't know where we went. I guess it was like either Santa Monica or Malibu, maybe. Where did we go? I feel like I'm forgetting the name of the actual beach we would go to. But we used to go to the beach in LA, you know, you know, just for the day. Mm-hmm. And we would usually bring lunch, although there was like a hot dog stand, which was kind of nasty. And I'm sure like overrun with like God knows what
mice.
Vermin. Well, I don't think there's so many rodents in LA, but like cockroaches galore by the beach, sure. You know. But by the way, I saw an opossum on the street in Williamsburg the other day. I'm so shocked.
Oh my God, it's like, I mean, that's so hipster. It's like, we can't, Williamsburg doesn't even have totally. Regular rats, they have to have possums.
That podcast gets more hits than we do. But, anyway, but we used to sit on the beach, but there were these people would walk by constantly with these, like, white styrofoam, like, coolers selling ice cream, you know, and, like, popsicles and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And we would always get those. And they, I think, you know, that was sort of before, I'm so old, that was before the era of, like, water bottles, really. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure, like, nowadays, you know, it would have everything, well, yeah. at least that an ice cream truck would have.
I mean,
you know?
They still do that here in Brooklyn, you know, ice cold, $1, $1, $1.
So I don't understand why we don't even have that in Fire Island. I'm not saying they should have it, like, May 1st, but in the peak of summer when the beach is so crowded.
Well, it is interesting, I mean, and again, it's like, I love this.
This is so us.
I mean, I love this because this is what makes Fire Island so special. So, like, I don't even think I want this. But there is a lot of untapped business opportunities in Fire Eye. I mean, Provincetown is, like, the opposite. It's, like, everything you could ever want. There's, like, a store for everything. There's, like, a store for fudge, a store for, a Marc Jacobs store, a bookstore,
Elizabeth Warren store.
Yeah, a store that only Marilyn May goes to buy clothes. Like,
literally.
I mean, it's, like, there's a thing for every, there's a movie theater with two theaters. It's, like, for this tiny
one of them
town.
Is always playing a Judy Garland documentary.
Yes, yes. And then in Fire Island, there's, like, you know, we love to do our shopping. There's, like, two stores, one is a plant store.
I mean, like, the fact that Daniel and I are such, like, shopaholic, like, retail addicts that, like, we still make the rounds in Fire Island right. says way more about us. Most people do not go into those right. stores. As opposed to Provincetown, where shopping is, like, a part of
it's
the
like
experience.
It's, like, a whole day, yeah. Yeah. On commercial.
Or for us, a daily ritual.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of, I got this wonderful, I wish I could remember the name of the store, but I got this wonderful, like, zip pullover because I was cold last summer in P-Town.
I remember.
It was, like, $10, and I wear it all the time. It was, like, such an investment.
How
don't you love it when you do that?
Do love.
Anyway, so yes, I joined Hinge.
Now, what is Hinge?
So it's the social dating app. But,
so it's like, I mean, it kind of just Cupid or Tinder,
it blurs with all of those, like, Bumble, all that shit, but
Coffee Meets Bagel,
Kettle of Fish, J-Date, Christian Mingle, which I got banned from because I was not acting too Christian. but a friend of mine has been going on a lot of dates from Hinge, so I thought I'd give it a whirl. And the thing I like about it is that it only gives you the free version. Only gives you like 10 likes a day. So you're really limited in.
Is 10 likes a day limited?
That yeah, I mean, like on Tinder and OkCupid, you get like literally like 50 or 75. It's like you just have a complete.
Oh, you mean in how many guys they show you?
No, just how many times you get to swipe right.
So you might swipe right on somebody that is. You're like, I'm willing to give it a try. And then you get somebody that you're like, my dream man, but I've run out of likes. Yeah. I mean, I guess they're hoping that happens. So
well, then you
pay
more,
yeah.
But,
they probably save all the good guys for number 11s through, you know.
That's right. But it's so good because it definitely, it helps discipline me because I'm like, all right, I, first of all, it takes me away from being on my phone all the time. But I'm like, I really need to make these choices based on what's right for me and not just based on, like, they're cute enough, you know. If they message me, we'll see where it goes.
Well, see, I constantly have this thing. I think I'm too picky in who I swipe right on. Mm-hmm. And, like, what am I so afraid of? Like,
I'm definitely
98%
not.
Of the people that I match with. Sorry, 98% of the people that. I shouldn't be saying this, but 98% of the people that message me, I don't mm-hmm. even write back. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't initiate contact with really anybody.
Oh, I'm such an initiator.
So, therefore, what would be the harm in me swiping right on somebody that I didn't want to swipe right on? None, because I still have like 12 more chances to reject them, right? Right. I make it sound like I'm so desirable. It's just because I'm on such a low status to begin with. But so once in a while, though, I swipe left out of like, you know, by rote. And I'm like, shit, that guy was really hot.
I do that too.
You know, and then...
And if you try to do the little like phone, like shake the phone to undo it.
That works.
On some apps it does. On OkCupid and Hinge it does.
I didn't They're know
like,
that.
Oh, no problem. Tinder's like, sorry, bitch, you gotta pay. Yeah. Anyway, but I need to really...
The night is bitter. The stars have lost their glitter.
I really need, in this new year, my goal is less screen time because I've really just let myself go, you know. The swiping is, it's more fun than the dates, you know?
Hell yeah.
I mean, it's like...
I'll say.
It's like a video game, you know? You're like, yes.
Where everyone loses.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know...
Speaking of video games.
Speaking of video games and speaking of losing, we are all winners whenever we have the chance to see our next guest. A true star, a true winner. I would swipe right for them daily if I could.
Even before I saw their shoulders in that tank top, yes, in our
honey,
hotel room.
Yes, honey. That all that fur.
Mm. You know, a better men than we would have, like, strapped Jeffrey Roberson down to that bed and, like, got our way with
right,
him.
Right, totally.
When that, like, hunk of man meat walked into our hotel
honey.
Room with the four-poster king-size bed, the fact that what we thought first to do is sit down and interview him about the
about
Mad
Show,
show. Really shows what's lacking in us.
I mean, honey, that was a merman.
Yes. Wow, we're so thrilled to be with Jeff Roberson today. Varla Jean Merman, we're absolutely gaga and grateful.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And, of course, in beautiful Provincetown.
Yes, with the
residency.
View. They don't see the view. Oh, my God.
they never
You can
will.
See the naked beach from here.
Is that true?
Wait, I know that guy.
I need to have What gave him
and
away?
And if you can see it from here.
Well, our podcast is called Broken Records because we like to talk to stars that inspire us about music, particularly like one album, if you can think of one that was particularly inspiring to you, whether either as a kid or even something new
oh, yeah,
now.
I know.
Or
yeah,
what,
yeah.
What would
and
that?
You can the Mad Magazine album. Do you know that?
Oh, no.
What's that?
That's what the girl from, the boy from is from.
Oh, The Mad Show.
The Mad Show,
the Mary
yeah,
Rogers.
Yeah. I just remember because they had the Mad Magazine
yes,
guy
totally.
On. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, I don't know the other songs from that, though.
Oh, my God. Stamp the Out Mad Hate.
Show.
You don't know that song?
No.
I've done that in a show. I mean, there's so many great songs in that show. Stamp Out Hate is such a great song.
We're gonna stamp out hate. Sock it in the eye. Shoot it in the stomach, yelling, die, die, die. We'll pull its insides out. And look at what it ate. We're gonna stamp out hate. We're gonna stamp out hate. Lash it with a switch. Amputate its arms and legs and see how long they twitch. We'll put its toes on hooks and dangle up for bait. We're gonna stamp out hate. We're gonna stamp.
It's so perfect for now because it's these kids talking about stamping out hate and then by the end they're violent. I mean, it is so amazing. We're going to rip it. We're going to just find a Nazi doctor who will boil it down to soap. You know, it's like crazy. It's such a great album.
Show's lyricist includes Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah,
well, I know he
the
wrote
boy
that,
from.
That song.
Tall and slender like an Apollo. He goes walking by and I have to follow him. The boy from Tacarembo, La Tumba del Fuego, Santa Malipa, Zacatecas, La Junta del Soli Cruz. When we meet, I feel I'm on fire and I'm breathless. Every time I inquire, how are things in Tacarembo, La Tumba del Fuego, Santa Malipa, Zacatecas, La Junta del Soli Cruz.
And there's another, Linda Lavin, Joanne Worley. I mean,
oh
come
my
on.
God.
Wonderful.
That's,
oh my God, we live.
That's so insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
No, it is an amazing album. There are so many skits, and it just really, I listened to that nonstop as a kid, so it really had a big effect on me.
But that must have been like a nerdy academic project.
I mean, oh, yeah, nobody knew that. I don't even know how I had it, because I knew it from the Mad Magazine, but that was really my introduction to sort of musical theater, because I saw the Mad Magazine guy, the Alfred E. Newman or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And so I got the album, and so that's, you know, how I even knew about musical theater.
And where are you from that you were?
Well, we were in Colorado Springs, which is, you know, at the time my dad was stationed there. And so that's where it was. Yeah. We moved to the South after that.
How big is Colorado Springs?
You know, I don't even know. I just know, you know, people say it's a very Republican place. As a kid, you don't know.
Yeah.
You know what that even means, so...
But are people surprised that their native son is a legendary drag queen?
Well, oddly, my mother has never even asked me what I've done for a living. Never has said, how are you making money?
Is it like a don't ask, don't tell thing, or is it?
I think so. I know she knows, because one time she did say something cunty, if I can say. She said, you know, your fans aren't the only ones that go to your website, which I was like, wait, so you're not a fan?
Mom? Classic actor response to that.
Yeah, wait, you're not a fan. I know, so I know she sort of knows, but we've never talked about it. Never.
Yeah. And your parents are conservative? And...
Yeah, my father passed away when I was young, but my mother is very Southern Baptist and conservative. Same. I mean, although I did finally tell her after I did it that I got married to a man, which... was shocking to her because she thought I was married to a woman.
No.
Named Carla?
Because actually I had been. It's a long story, but then, you know, we weren't together anymore, but I never bothered to tell her.
Well, that was on you.
We're real close. Yeah. But things have been better. I mean, she just, you know, she's from a world of a very small town in Arkansas, Arkadelphia, and just, you know, I just think she was confused by me, and I think she's very religious, and people always say, come out to your parents, it'll be great, but it doesn't always end that way. I mean, she was very conservative, and I think, you know, a lot of these Baptist things, I think they are taught that, you know, people will try to normalize these things, and you have to watch out, because next thing, you know, they're going to be having sex with goats. So I think that is ingrained in them, that people will try to get them to think that this is normal. And so I think that's in a lot of their heads, you know. But, you know, she was very kind about the marriage and says, you know, I don't quite understand it all, but, you know, he's, you know, obviously welcome in our family. So
that was a big deal. So,
Baby steps. I'm 50 years old. Yeah. So who knows, you know, where it'll go.
What about the extended family? Like, have you seen a shift? I mean, I know I first saw you at Josie's in San Francisco in 1997, maybe.
Jesus, right before I closed it. I know.
You know what? They still don't have a venue like that to replace it.
No, I know. I mean, I really like Oasis. I do.
Yes, but Darcy is such a wonderful
director. I love performing there, because I had performed, you know, at, you know, the Raz Room and Feinstein's. Right. And then Feinstein's, you know, even though it's a great place, it's just, it can be too expensive to get a younger crowd.
Absolutely.
And so if you're, you know, a grand dame of cabaret, it is great. Or, you know, but if you are trying to get a younger fan base, it is not where you go to do that. Even though, believe me, I miss staying in the penthouse of the Nico Hotel.
Yes, it's beautiful.
And now, you know, heck, Lena, who owns Oasis, puts me up in a motel in the Mission. So every now and then, I, you know.
Well, we want Heclina to stay in business.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
to thrive. You've been doing this for a long time. Varla has been a star for a long time, you know, in a very major, central to the field or the genre way.
93, I think I moved to New York, and then I, there was a big march on Washington, I think in 93, and so I had just moved to New York, and then I performed at a benefit. Well, I started doing drag in New Orleans, but, you know, I did all these videos. I wouldn't go out and drag. Me and my friend would just make videos, like John Waters kind of 30-minute videos they'd play when people were, you know, playing music, like dance music, and they'd play these videos of me just running around the city being chased by a plastic rat or drinking milk in malls, you know. So weird. So
but that makes so much sense when you talk about the Mad Show, because,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yeah.
that and even now, I mean, even there's such an element of like sketch comedy and political commentary, social commentary.
You know, I loved, oh my God, that album. I still, I mean, Joanne Worley, you know, I mean, there's so many funny lines in that thing. She goes, tonight, yeah, there's a, something about the most passive aggressive parents award. And she's like, tonight, young lady, you're going to eat your dinner cold. What are we having for dinner, Ma? Tuna fish salad. You know, I love jokes like that.
Home for dinner an hour late. It doesn't bother you that I slave all day long over a hot stove, huh? Well, tonight, young lady, you eat your dinner cold.
What's for dinner, Ma?
Tuna fish salad. You know what the trouble with you is? The trouble with you is you have no sense of responsibility. When I was your age, I was married and had a child already.
Ma, I want to get engaged.
You want to get engaged? You're only a baby. You just think you're grown up, but I know better. And don't think I don't know what you're doing all day long, necking and petting.
Ma, you didn't lay a hand on
me. Who would want to the way you look? Just keep it up, Miss Beatnik, and you'll see how popular you'll be. You'll end up an old maid yet.
Ma, I got a date every single day.
You're never home. It would kill you to spend some time with your parents. For all we see of you, you might as well pack up and move out.
I was thinking
that. Don't get sarcastic with me, young lady.
No, I mean it.
You mean leave this house and go live with strangers? I wouldn't let you. We love you.
But I moved to New York after, because my friend who I went to high school with, had, who was gay, had moved to New York. And he's like, I just saw, and I was doing drag a little bit in New Orleans, but mostly the videos.
Yeah.
And he was like, I just went to a drag show last night where the drag queen did a monologue about going to Tower Records to buy a Wagner recording by Ava Marton. And it was all set to Wagner's Liebestod, which I was like, what is going on in New York City? Because I thought, you know, in New Orleans, people were lip syncing to Whitney Houston, probably Melissa Manchester at that point. But, you know, I just thought, what is going on that you could even do that? I mean, I knew what all those references was. Yeah. I knew all of that. But I would never try to do that to a New Orleans bar crowd. So I thought, what is going on? Now, that turns out it was Miss Coco Peru who had done that, who had done a monologue about, you know, she wanted an Ava Martin by Wagner, you know. So, I mean, it was a really hysterical monologue. And I moved to New York purposely to stalk Miss Coco.
How wonderful. Really? That you guys did that work together.
Yes,
girls
we did.
Girls.
Well, we became friends. And, you know, and my new show this year, Stars Board, is a lot about how drag is really, no matter, because, you know, people are, you know, the whole drag on television has sort of changed the landscape, but how that all of drag queens are really basically connected and how we've built on each other. And so, you know, and how that is a part of that. And so Miss Coco is a part of mine. And it's just a story of homage to, you know, drag through the years. And also Frank DeCaro writing that book this year, I thought was very...
Oh, right, yes.
Well, also it was so different from the New York Magazine article that said the most powerful drags in the world, and they were only RuPaul girls.
Oh, right.
So it'd be like saying the greatest singers in the world and only being people on American Idol.
Exactly, yeah.
Which, you know, it ruffled some feathers. And so for Frank to really do a book that included both.
Sure.
And the history of drag, which was more important than anything for, you know, these young kids to know. Because, you know, when we started, when I started drag, when Coco did drag, we've talked about it. We couldn't go on YouTube and look how to do makeup. Now, they all look alike.
Right, right.
Which is sort of sad in a way, because we could just do whatever we wanted. There was no standard of beauty.
Sure.
Now there is a standard of beauty for any drag. You have to have the ombre eyebrows. You have to glue them down. You have to have all this...
The contoured nose. And
yeah,
all that.
And back in the day, we didn't have... You just did what you wanted to. Whatever was funny, whatever worked. There was no standard, you know.
What did you... I mean... Did you go to school? Because you sing. I mean, speaking of Wagner, I mean, you have like a classical soprano.
Well, my balls dropped when I turned 45. Literally. I know I say in my show, I sing everything now in the key of B, Arthur. And I do. I used to have the craziest high voice. I mean, I was Mary Sunshine, you know, on Broadway.
Right.
So for a little bit. And I toured with the First National Tour Company. But I mean, I just don't have that voice anymore. I mean, well, neither does Joni Mitchell. So it's like, I mean, it just changed. So I had change my whole, but I've had to change my career, you know, a couple times. Because when I first started, I weighed 300 pounds and I was fat, so all my jokes are fat. Well, I had to change. It's kind of when I came to P-Town, I had gotten really big and all my videos had me as a big girl, but then I was doing the show as a thin person, and then people after the show would say, who's the fat girl in the video?
Like, my sister.
Yeah, I know. So I had to change, because fat jokes, when you're a fat comedian, I mean, you're lucky because you have something to talk about. Mm-hmm. I mean, someone else has to really figure out what's funny. Not that, you know, it's not a talent to fat jokes, but they are sort of, I found them after I realized, oh my God, I've been using these as a crutch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's so easy to go for the fat girl joke. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But it got you started.
Oh, and then you got evolved, me started. That's why I did the cheese and all that. It came from being big, you know? I mean, I used to, in New York, I also used to do, I mean, I would perform in bars, and it wasn't until I stopped performing in bars that you can do a different kind of material. But I remember I used to have a cow tongue that I would make out, I think, with that song, If I Were Your Woman, by Gladys Knight. I have no idea. But I was poor at the time. I mean, I was working at Ogilvy & Mather, an ad agency. And so I'd get a cow tongue, and it sounds so gross, but I was more divine-ish. And I would freeze the cow tongue, and then when I needed it, I'd defrost it. When I needed it, I'd put it back in the freezer.
God. The same cow tongue.
Yeah, gross.
Wow. That's the gritty history.
Yeah, I think it's still in my freezer.
So funny. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, did you do, like, wig stock and all that? Like, was that...
I did, yeah. Even in this last movie, Wig, there's some scenes of me from, like, 1996, 95. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And then when I started coming to P-Town, I really didn't do it that much. And Wigstock had started to end at that point anyway. I mean, I can't remember how long it went, but it was just, I stayed here to work. I mean, Wigstock's for free, and even though I loved it, you know, getting from here to New York is a chore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I just would stay here. I was lazy.
Because that's always been like, it's like September, right, when that has been?
It's always, Wigstock would always be the Sunday before Labor Day, wasn't it? Was it on Labor? It was a Sunday before Labor Day.
Yeah, because I remember last year.
Yeah,
it was in New York when everyone was here.
So I went last year. We went on a bus, me and Peaches Christ and all these young girls from town, and we immediately realized on the bus, me and Peaches. Do you know Peaches Christ?
Yeah.
We were like, Joshua. Oh my God. We cannot be on this bus because they're never coming home and it's going to be a nightmare. And we're like, we're old ladies. And so we rented a car and came home, and then we heard it was a nightmare.
Yeah, smart. Well, you just know that, you know the signs. You've seen it before.
Oh, I know, because I used to be that nightmare girl. Doing poppers in the back of a bus for no reason. Like, why? They were doing that. Why poppers? Like,
just
why?
Amp it up. Do you, I mean, it must be, aside from, you know, things like that New York Magazine article, in general, I imagine my impression would be that as far as in the business of drag, that it's created a lot more of a market with the TV show.
There is a market, but yes, but it's also been, you know, I can keep the markets that I have been in and, you know, where I definitely sell. But to go to a new market, and I have a whole bit in my show about this, is that this guy wanted to book me in Canada. And he saw my show in San Diego, and he loved the show, and he really loved it. And so he's like, oh, my God, you know, we hired some of these RuPaul girls, and they come, and they don't have a show, and, you know, people are so upset.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of you.
Yes. And so I was like, oh, and so he's going to hire me. But then he went online and saw how many fans I had on Instagram, and it was, like, totally freaked out and then didn't book me because I didn't have enough fans on Instagram.
Oh, my God.
But it's not just drag. Every profession, makeup artist, hairstylist. If you don't have all these fans on Instagram, you know, L'Oreal, these places will not hire you. And then the people who do get it are like these overnight sensations, these kids, but then they develop this huge fan base. And so it's every occupation that's affected by Instagram followers. But it does not equate, because I do a big thing in my show. Lady Gaga has like 36 million followers, and then Barbara Streisand has under a million. Like, not even a million. And then Kylie Jenner has 145 million followers.
Oh, kill me.
So I do a whole thing, you know, Canada's getting an evening, Saskatchewan's getting an evening with Kylie Jenner. You know, like, poor Barbara can't even get booked in Canada anymore. But it is sort of a thing. None of Barbara's fans are really on Instagram, you know? And so, but that doesn't equate, you know, talent or, but it does, it makes it easier because, as you know, people, you know, will...
laugh just because someone's been on TV.
Yeah,
as right. if they don't know you, they're there to judge you.
Right, right. You know? But it's amazing when I think about you doing that in the time before there was even any kind of social media. I mean, how did I know to go see you at Josie's?
Well, I do a whole thing in my show about word of mouth and just that, you know, back then, gay rags and word of mouth is how it works. So you perform in P-Town, somebody goes home and they say, oh my God, I saw the show. And then you go to San Francisco and like, oh, that's the show we saw in P-Town. And that's the only way it worked. You know, I do a whole thing about, you know, how, you know, we all knew Rod Stewart had to have his stomach pumped because he relieved an entire barroom full of sailors. That was a rumor when we were kids. And we all knew this before the internet. And it wasn't like it was in the news. Everybody my age knows this rumor. Right. Everybody knows this
rumor.
It's
like the Richard Gere gerbil.
Yeah, gerbil joke. Yeah, same thing. You know, it's just, although I've used that joke so many times I couldn't this year. The gerbil joke. But it is. I mean, word of mouth. I mean, I can't believe how, you know, I could go to different cities. San Francisco, Los Angeles. And you know, Seattle and all these places, but you could go to the big cities. It would be a harder sell to go to the smaller.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that that you're able to, even with the drag race culture and the Instagram corporatization, you're still able to hold on to the footholds in all those markets?
Oh yeah, I still work, you know, as much as I want to. So I've never had a time where I'm like, oh God, get me some work. You know, I mean, definitely, you know, I used to make, I think, more money just because there was less going on. And now there's just, you know, it's flooded the market.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If someone wants you for an appearance, they don't have to pay what they used to pay you because there's like so many other girls who will do it. So you really got away. And the only thing about the girls, I mean, some of the girls are so good, like Jinx Monsoon and, of course, Bianca and you know, Ben de la Creme. I mean, excellent shows. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you go to some bars and the girls just come out and they don't even perform. They just take dollar bills.
Yeah.
It's just wild.
Yeah.
Just you get away with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, most people go to their shows not to see the show, but to take a picture.
Yeah.
Totally.
Which, you know, it's just bizarre to me.
No, I see. I don't know if Mark told you, but I'm here because I direct the Countess Luann
show. Oh, yes.
And it's shocking. I mean, they will try to take selfies with her during the show. I mean, it's what they're there for.
Yes.
You know, it's to put it on their Instagram and have it. It's that they got that trophy.
Yeah.
It's like a ticket stub or a playbill or something.
Well, and those are the girls that are going to survive, the ones that have a show, but most of those girls I mentioned already had a show before they got on. Can you imagine getting famous and saying, shit, what am I going to do?
Well, we saw that with Aquaria from Drag Race, who we saw in Fire Island, who, you know, won, and so now has this potential for this career, but doesn't have the show for it. Yeah, I mean,
and see, all these other girls had shows. Like, Bianca already had a show.
Sure.
I mean, you know.
No, I saw Jinx before Drag Race. I mean,
yeah.
You know, people are always asking me if I'm on Ozempic, and let me tell you, I do not mind them asking me that. But I'm not on Ozempic. They especially ask me that when they see me eating dessert, or desserts, or all the crap I eat when I'm out. But my secret is that when I'm home, when I'm by myself, I'm eating Factor. Factor sends me restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever I am. No prepping, no cooking, no cleanup, except for, like, my fork. And now you can enjoy Factor Meals too. Go to factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 and use code giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off. That's code giantsinthesky50 at factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And what do you think about, like, in terms of, I mean, this town is so unique, you know, because, I mean, you come here and it's like, how does a person see all the shows they want to see in their limited time as opposed to, I mean, really anywhere else? Certainly, like, the other, Fire Island, we see even, like, the bigger stars. I mean, Lady Bunny and Shangela, it's still hard for them to sell out even a one-night gig. And here it's
the market's flooded. It is just flooded. And I mean, here in Provincetown, there are so many shows. I mean, there's so many. So I have found, too, now it works in Provincetown, you just have to have a great title. You know, some people come to town with these bizarre titles, and people... It really matters. A title really matters.
Even for someone like you, where, I mean, you know, we know we're going to come to P-Town once during the summer. We're going to go see Varla. Yeah. It's not a matter of, like, what is she doing this year? We'll find out when we see the show.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that. And then, but what is great about it is that it's made everybody have to work really hard. Because if you come to P-Town with a bad show and it's not the best, it may take you a couple years to get people back. Because they're like, oh, we saw her last year. Wasn't that great? Let's go see something else. So you have to top yourself every year, which is exhausting.
Topping yourself, But why do you think, like, I mean, have you ever tried to do a kind of a residency the way it has in P-Town somewhere else?
I do one in Palm Springs. I did for, like, 5 weeks, which was
is
great.
Is that, like, a spring thing?
Yeah. I do it in usually in April, March, April. I'm doing it again this year. And then Puerto Vallarta, which is actually
I've heard
a harder
that's, like, a real, but that there's
it
a
is
lot
great.
Of drag shows there.
There are so many drag shows, and... Oddly, most of the people who come there are Canadian.
Really?
So if you're big in Canada, like Misconception, who's a friend of mine who has a great show, he kills down there. Whereas he has kind of a harder time here because people don't know who he is because he hasn't been on television. So, and he's, you know, just starting here in Provincetown, you have to really, it takes years to really get people to come to your show. You know, some people come here for like 2 weeks and they think they're going to like sell out, but if you're not on TV or, you know, there's not time.
Yeah.
So he does really well in Misconception and Puerto Vallarta, and I've done pretty good there, but you know, I'm putting the investment in to go because I love it.
Yeah.
Well, because here in Provincetown, the beach, you know, it takes you like a half a day to get there. And then I burn. I have to come home.
Yeah.
Puerto Vallarta, you just sit there. Yeah. And everything comes to you. It's amazing.
And I was once going to do a gig there, and my mom was like freaking out. There's so much homophobia. You have to be careful.
Oh, no.
You
know, and Puerto Vallarta, I mean, it has to be run by the cartel because it is so safe and perfect. Oh, why is it like that? Because, you know, a lot of Mexico... is not, and you have to be very careful in Mexico. But I've only heard of one incident in Puerto Vallarta that I know where there was a little, you know, somebody got hurt, and you know, one out of, you know, thousands and thousands of tourists. So, I mean, I consider that pretty good. I think they really protect the city, you know, because they know that there's so much money there, and if it gets a bad rap, you know, just like New Orleans, where I'm from, in the French Quarter, anytime something bad happens, which has happened a lot lately, it really hurts tourism. You know, but Puerto Vallarta, they really have protected it. I mean, I feel completely safe there. Completely. I'm not out at 5 a.m. when the incident I'm telling you happened was like 4:35 a.m. And not that you shouldn't be able to go out at any time, but
of course. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, also, you look like you could take any threat
me.
That would come your way.
As a man or a woman, people don't come near me.
Do you go back to New Orleans a lot?
I do. Yeah. I'm doing a Christmas show there. A friend of mine, we wrote a show that actually finally got published by Dramatists.
Oh, congratulations. Wow.
Yeah, thank you.
What is that?
It's called Scrooge and Rouge, and it's three-person show, and it's an original musical, and it's about a Victorian music hall era actor troupe who's doing a Christmas carol, and the entire cast gets sick because somebody brought some bad food, you know, to the cast party. And so there's only the actor who's kind of like the John Gielgud type who plays Scrooge, and then me who played like, I play a kind of the whore of the group who's not even, was never even asked to be on any stage. It was like a Corrine type who has to play all these parts. And then a dresser who has to, a gay male dresser who has to play all the other parts. And so, of course.
God, I want to see this.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's really fun.
So I love any kind of something gone wrong type of
script. Oh, it's great. And it's, you know, just bizarre things happen, you know, wrong costumes from other shows or worn, and you know, so it's really funny, and they're doing it all over the place. I mean,
oh, that's wonderful.
Finally,
that
I don't
is
have to
great.
Work. Not that I mean I have to work, but it's nice to have something that works for you.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the holiday show is such a great, great,
and only three people love it. That's original. Yeah,
how is it doing like that? And now we're going to see you tomorrow in First Wives Fight Club, and I mean, Peaches like really made a whole business.
Oh God,
out of this whole thing.
I mean, I. You know, I hadn't written a lot of my own, and then Peaches and I last year wrote The Whining, which was based on The Shining, about two queens who stay in Provincetown for the winter.
So brilliant.
And that was really great. And so we decided to... it was really funny. And so we... and it turns out the town crier is like... You know, the town crier kind of plays the kind of bartender part, you know. So it's really...
Oh, funny. That's genius.
And the whole thing was about the town crier used to be the one on the street, and then all the drags came in and kind of stole his thunder. But first of all, Fight Club, we decided... I knew Peaches wouldn't be back because he does a huge Halloween haunted house in San Francisco that was so successful last year that he couldn't come back. And so we decided to write First Wives Fight Club together. Now, he puts up a show in a week. Yeah. So dancing, everything. I mean, so it is, you know, a different kind of show. It's all about, you know, it's like encore. You know, it's like in New York, you just have a week. And so it's not perfect. It's not, you know, and that's the fun of it. People are expecting it. So he did it first. With Brooklyn Heights and Ginger Minj and Raja, and then I did it here with Jinx and Liza Lott.
Yeah,
from here. So, but we had a lot more time to work on it. But Peaches and I are going to do it together, I think, in Fort Lauderdale. In
April. Wonderful! And you're playing Annie, the
Diane
Keaton
role. Yes, I play the
Do you like that movie? We were just talking about that at lunch.
Well, it's such a bizarre movie if you think about it. In a way, I heard that there were many rewrites and stuff. And you know, the guy who wrote Steel Magnolias, Robert Harling, wrote it.
Yes, I forgot.
Yes,
but. And the reason why I had the idea first is because in First Wives Club, there's all this weird violence. Like, you know, remember the therapist, Marsha Gay Harden?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is having her hit her with the bat. She's like, hit me. And then the girls get in a fight. Remember, they punch each other and slap each other in the apartment.
Yeah, they each slap
each other. So the whole show turns to Fight Club.
Oh, that's too that's funny. So good.
Yeah, and then we have the stalker Channing part, who's the person who kills himself at the beginning, which is, you know, also very strange.
Yeah, way to start a comedy.
She jumps to her death. You know, we kind of have that as the Helena Bonham Carter part, who sort of feminizes the entire plot. Fight Club. So it just, and then it turns out, you know, somebody's obviously the same person as like Fight Club.
Oh, I love it.
What's weird is that, a lot of gay guys have not seen Fight Club. So it's a bit of a challenge because you want people to kind of know the source material, but we didn't take a lot from Fight Club, but it's just, you know, there's some things you have to know.
Right. Or I mean, what's that? The so first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. Yeah, I mean, that, I think like, that's universal.
Yeah. Because we had, you know, what's the first rule of First Wives Fight Club? Tell everyone! No!
Oh, God. I just remember watching that movie when I was little, and there's like a really nice shot of Brad Pitt's ass.
Oh, the movie is, you know, hard to watch. When I watched it last summer, here, I can only watch 20 minutes of it at a time, and it's so disturbing.
It's
and even just like the whole opening with Helena Bonham Carter and Edward Norton, they meet each other because they both go to 12-step programs, you know, for like cancer survivor programs, and they're pretending that they are, you know, victims, and, you know, they realize they're both doing the same thing, and it's just it's upsetting. And then Meatloaf has his giant breasts for no reason. I don't know. You know, he has his giant breasts. Meatloaf has giant boobs, which is just such a weird choice.
Oh, right.
And it's such a straight guy movie for being so homoerotic.
Yeah. It's very
homoerotic. The guy with the book was gay, but the movie's very straight.
I don't think I even knew there was a book.
Chuck Palahniuk.
Somebody,
What were the, I mean, besides Coco Peru, what were the movies or performers that you know, you wanted to be or that...
Well, see, when I grew up, I mean, I was just obsessed with Carol Burnett because, you know, and that's how I have a relation with drag. It's not, you know, I mean, you know, people sometimes confuse drag, not as much now, but that, you know, someone wants to be a woman or that they want to be trans or, you know, it had nothing to do with that for me. It was always about, I wanted to wear that Mrs. Higgins costume. I wanted to wear the Gone with the Wind costume. I wanted to wear the costumes. I mean, just for the fun part. But I was obsessed with that. And there was also, you know, the Barbara Mandrell.
Oh, I used to watch that show.
It's hysterical. And, you know, Donnie and Marie were around that time for me as of growing up. So there was just so much showbiz, like old-fashioned showbiz, that had come back for a little bit. And then, of course, it was gone. And those truly inspired me. And then, you know, as I got older and you know, I loved Charles Bush, you know, and I just thought it was... you know, amazing what Charles had done. And, you know, I was in Vampire Lesbians of Sodom very early on in production in New Orleans. Yes. And then, you know, I did, and Charles came to see it, which is so nerve wracking. You know, when the writer comes, Charles came to see me in Boston at the Speakeasy Theater Company do Divine Sister. Mm. And then I did a couple productions of that, which was so much fun.
Oh, that was a good show. I saw that.
It was
that
a great show, yeah.
So when you were little, were you, like, dressing up and putting on shows around the house, or, like...
Oddly, at that time, I was doing disco dancing.
Oh, yes.
It's so funny, because in the Christmas catalog we would get, you know, back in the day, you know, for Christmas, I would go to the disco light section, so mm-hmm. I could have lights and stuff in the basement.
Oh, that's elaborate.
Yeah.
And what about the singing?
I really didn't do shows. I really didn't sing until I went to... Because nobody in my family was musical, I went to this boarding school for high school. You had to test into it. Mm. And I was there for chemistry. And you lived on a college campus and you took college courses, and it was all state funded. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable that they have this in Louisiana. It's called the Louisiana School for Math, Science, and the Arts. And I was talking in the hallway one day to somebody, and the choir teacher was like, "You have a high voice. Are you tenor?" I'm like, "I don't even know what that is." He goes, "Please be in the choir. We need tenors." And so that's how I started. But then by the end, I had gotten a full vocal scholarship to Louisiana State University, and I ended up not graduating in that because I realized I just didn't want to be an opera singer, and I didn't want to take music theory. Oh, my God.
Did you have any, besides, you know, I mean, it's interesting that you would have said the Mad Show. I mean, Linda Lavin and Joanne Worley are such great performers who
amazing,
sing, but,
yes.
You know, it wasn't, you didn't say Barbara Streisand or Whitney Houston or
no, and don't get me wrong, I loved Barbara Streisand. I mean, I was obsessed with the movie The Main Event, and I was obsessed with What's Up, Doc. Like, I loved her as a comedian. I loved her as a comedian. What's Up, Doc? I could not believe how funny she was. And then that's when I learned who Madeline Kahn was.
Yes.
But see, I was drawn more to the Madeline Kahn, and I just liked the more character. And I really... didn't know Barbara Streisand as a vocalist until I got to college. I was hanging around these gay guys, and they play it constantly. And then you're like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable when you think about it. I remember just listening to that first Greatest Hits album where she has the big kind of Pentecostal hair.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
Just over and over and over, you know, Sam. You know, so I just, I was obsessed with her after that, and then I learned everything about her, but...
But you knew your voice was a means to an end. It was, you didn't want to do anything that was just about the voice.
Yeah, I just, you know, but I did, you know, do a lot of opera singing and parodies, and...
Mm-hmm.
Which really helped me now. I did a show with a soprano named Marisol Montalvo. We're doing it at Joe's Pub on...
Oh,
January 5th. We just did it at Ravinia. Which
oh,
great.
Fabulous.
And it's a great show called Mad Scene, and it's about, she's a Puerto Rican girl from Long Island, and how she wanted to just become an opera singer because she thought it looked neat. And then, you know, she flunked out of Manus, and then she decided to do a beauty pageant, and she came first runner-up Miss America, but she met Kathleen Battle, who was a judge.
Oh, wow.
And then she started getting booked doing modern music, and she had such bad nerves. Modern music really made her relax because she knew nobody knew what it was supposed to sound like. Because if you think about it, any opera aria, you know the most amazing singers in the world doing it from recordings. Mm-hmm. So when you hear someone really sing it and it's not quite as good, everyone's thinking, well, it's not Maria Callas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It has to be the pressure for an opera singer. And that's why it's called Mad Scene. It's a cabaret show, but she sings all this amazing classical music.
Oh, cool.
And then she got addicted because she had no technique. It sounds so crazy, but she would sing and she didn't want to worry about her voice, so she would just let it all, and she would get this euphoria by, you know, she did roles like Lulu, which is a Berg opera, and she would take prednisone.
Oh, like steroids.
Every night.
Oh, my God. Whoa.
And so she was working all the time, but then after a while, you know, steroids kills your voice. Prednisone is for emergencies. And she was taking it every night so that she didn't have to worry about it, but her not worrying about her voice gave her this sort of euphoria where she didn't worry about it. So it was addicted to a drug. And then she had to have vocal surgery by that guy, Steven Zeidels, who did, you know, Adele and Steven Tyler. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating story. And then the biggest thing is that she sang at Carnegie Hall, had a disastrous performance, and then... She knew she needed vocal surgery. She went to the doctor. And then to make the money, though, she had to sing in Carnegie Hall again that week as the Mater Gloriosa in whatever... Oh, God, what is it? But she only had to sing for a minute and 26 seconds. So it's a great part of the show where she talks about just having to sing for a minute and 26 seconds, but having to pump herself up with so much cortisone.
That's insane.
Oh my God. Just to get through it. I mean, it's a great show.
That reminds me of Elaine Stritch. That's just such high stakes.
Oh, yeah, I love the show. And so she is a great actress. So Joe's Pub, January 5th. And I'm doing my show the 3rd and 4th. So it's a
great weekend. Oh, we'll see all of that. That's exciting. We don't see you in New York enough.
No, I haven't been in a while. You know, just my schedule and but I'm definitely at Joe's Pub.
Wonderful.
Which I was there, one of the original people.
At Joe's Pub. I saw you there too in like 1999 or something. Yeah.
I mean, George Wolfe, had asked me. And you know, to
Wiley
do a show
Housen
back then.
And,
yeah, I mean, that's a long time ago. Because Faith Prince talked about in her show that she had done it 20-something years ago, and that's when I did it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. I was there the first week when they opened, and they had Audra McDonald.
Yeah, yeah. My colleagues.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Well, it is. I mean, I didn't know you had done Chicago on Broadway. I remember now that you had done
I was the original vacation swing. So you had David Sabella and you had Jeff Leverholtz, and then I came in whenever they needed to go on vacation. And so then they wouldn't give me a tour, and I just kept telling myself, because they need me here for the vacation, how dare they? Uh-huh. But then they finally gave me a touring company. But, you know, a touring company is so hard.
I can't imagine.
Oh my God. It was...
How many cities did you do?
I did... Oh my God, I don't even know. We were in Tokyo for 6 weeks, so that's why I really went.
Oh wow.
But I went to get the Hello Kitty toaster because I saw a thing that this Hello Kitty toaster, which imprinted Kitty's face on the toast.
I mean, that
like
is
the Shroud
worth
of
it.
Turin. And they only sold in Japan. I'm like, this is a sign from God. I really thought that. I'd see that the next day they asked me to do it. So I was like, they're going to Japan. And I had a great time.
Yeah.
First of all, to go to Tokyo and have someone pick up the bill.
Absolutely.
And be in a nice hotel. And it was great.
Per diem.
But then we went directly from Tokyo to Schenectady. It wasn't a direct flight. I know. You know.
How long did you stay in that tour for?
I was in like 7 months, I think.
That's
and then
really
I came
good.
Back
good.
Here.
Good
and it was good. I mean, but it was the most nerve-wracking thing, like an opera singer, because you have to walk up a flight of stairs and hit that B natural as you walk up. And I remember I was freaking out. My palms would sweat. I could, you know, it just was driving me crazy. And then when I saw the movie with Christine Baranski, when Billy Flynn, Richard Gere, was saying his lines, my heart started racing. My palms were sweating. I had to get out of the theater. I had like a panic attack.
Oh, amazing. And of course, she didn't have to sing any of those.
She didn't have
notes.
To sing it.
Yeah.
Or walk upstairs. I mean, they had you walk upstairs.
Well, okay.
I do remember, though, when we were on the... It's a funny story. We were on the road, and Sandy Duncan broke her foot.
Oh.
In
Did you do it with
Sacramento.
Her?
Well, she was supposed to do it, and the day of the put-in...
Oh,
she fell
God.
Backwards on the ladder and was dangling by her foot. So, you know, and there was lots of jokes about Peter Pan and wires. Anyway, so...
Right.
So
glass eye.
Yeah, they had... Yeah, someone said, well, can they replace her foot with the glass one? My friend! It's terrible. But so they bring in Anne Reinking. And so she had not done it in a long time. But they promised Boston a star because we were going to Boston next. And so Anne, you know, who was amazing in the role, but you know, she had gained a lot of weight, and they just kind of put her in boxer shorts, you know.
Oh,
she didn't
God.
Have the dresses on.
Wow.
She was in boxer shorts and t-shirts.
Thank God.
And she was doing the Billy Flynn, which was, she meets Velma Kelly for the first time, she's like, but she would just go on, okay, it went on and on and on. It got
like shtick?
Shtick. You know, she's like, oh, Thelma Kelly. You know, oh, I've heard about it. She was like, oh, babe. It was so
God.
Bizarre that I called my friend Christine Zbornik, if you know Christine Zbornik, in New York
hilarious.
City. And I had a cell phone by that time. It was like late 90s. And I recorded just a thing, totally legally, on the thing. And I just hung up. Well, I didn't call Christine for a few weeks. I called her a few weeks and said, did you get that message I sent? That was you? I thought that one of my relatives was having a stroke. She was furious with me. She thought her mother was having a heart attack trying to talk
God.
To her. No, it's just Anne was acting.
Wow. That's hilarious. I wouldn't have thought, I would have guessed the opposite of Anne. That's so funny.
I know. I think, I don't know. She was just like having fun, I think, yeah. You know?
Wow.
She was still great. I mean, don't get me wrong, but that was a funny
thing. I idolized her. But I never saw her, but the people that saw Sandy Duncan, I remember saying, oh, she's the best Roxy.
Yeah, I heard that too, but I never saw her. Yeah, wow. I never saw her.
There's that video on YouTube, it's called like 9 Roxys or something.
Oh, really?
And is she in it?
I think she's in Sandy it. Duncan. And there's like 9 different, it shows like the little Roxy monologue, it shows like 9 different performers doing it in a row, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, we had a girl that nobody knew, and I don't know if she's still around, I don't know, Belle Calloway was her name? She was unbelievable.
Yeah.
She was fantastic. I mean, she was great. The weirdest thing happened in Boise, though, because we were, Deidre Goodwin was singing All That Jazz, and she comes out, and we're in Boise. I remember I'm listening to it, and she starts singing, and you can immediately tell that she has no voice.
Hmm.
So she's like, you can tell, and it's getting worse as the song goes. And we're all, you know, the whole cast, like, oh my God.
And that's like the opening number.
And you, okay, oh so there's like gunshots, people die, you know, all of that is happening with Deidre Goodwin, who's African-American. And so she's like, you know, where the gin is cold and the piano is hot. But she's like, gin cold. And she went, and all that jazz. And then they say, the role of Velma Kelly will now be played by... And then they bring in this tall blonde girl that looked like Angie Shore. But this tall, tall, crazy leggy blonde. So people must be, what is happening? What happened? What happened to the black girl that shot the guy?
She's in jail. Like,
what?
Well, so what happened? I mean, that...
And that's just... I mean, I've only done one Broadway show, so it's just so funny. I did that show with Leslie Jordan that was off-Broadway that was, you know...
Oh, on the pink carpet or something like that?
Oh, no, this was called Lucky Guy.
Oh, with Jen Colella.
Yes. Unbelievable.
On 42nd Street.
Yes. And who is... she's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that was so much fun. But that was just... I never had a taste of... See, when I do a show or any show and I want to change it, I just change it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
When you have to change the tiniest thing, people don't understand, on Broadway, if you change one word, it's dropped. Mm-hmm. Everyone has to be brought in with the unions, and everybody has to go through the whole show, because someone may be affected changing somewhere else, so you just have to do it. So you cannot make big changes once you're in New York, and the show, I think, needed some work at that point, and I loved the show, but it was the same year that Book of Mormon came out, which was a total different comedy. This was very, it was just not that edgy comedy. It was still a great show, but I had a great time doing that. It
was Leslie Jordan was so funny. He must do
so
well in
funny.
P-Town.
Yes, he does great. And we played, you know, the villains. So we were like, a Southern fried Boris and Natasha, basically. You know? So it was great. He even gets me pregnant.
That's true.
I know. William Ivy Long made all the costumes.
Oh, fabulous.
And there was one costume that was on wheels. So it was this... dress, they'd bring me up through the stage.
Oh,
I mean, they had a budget, and it was this giant denim dress that looked like clover. I mean, it was just like this crazy shape, and then they would spin me around, and it was on a wheels. And I remember
crazy.
Yeah, I think the dress cost $40,000.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, it was great.
Wow, I wish I'd seen that show now. I wonder if it
was
in the
really
Lincoln
good.
Center, library.
The archives.
I had to hit a high E too, above high C every night. But that was easy because I used to suck in air like Mariah Carey, and so I could hit those crazy notes.
Whistle tone.
Yeah, whistle.
I mean, that's like a Barbara Cook. That's a great. That's a slouch note.
I've never missed. Thank God.
Okay, but for a male soprano, there's not that many parts.
No.
But if your voice dropped, then I would think you would be a natural for so many things.
I don't know. See, it's so hard too when I did the soprano stuff. I actually did an opera one time, The Medium, Charles Menotti, and we did it for real. But I learned a big lesson with that. If you say Varley Jean Merriman in The Medium, it's like saying, what's her name? Edith Bunker in Medea.
Right. Yeah.
People expect a comedy. It was not a comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
And even the New York Times was like, why didn't Charles Bush rewrite this? Because we're not doing a parody.
Yeah.
It's like, what? And but to sing falsetto... And to have to scream and be angry because I basically kill someone in the show, and to sing falsetto with someone who is a natural soprano is just why would any idiot do that? Because the soprano is supported, and oh my god, and falsetto is false, and it was very tough. I'll never do that again. It was hard. Do you know the show The Medium?
No, I was thinking there was some. It's like a solo piece, right?
No, it's like six people. Oh. It's a modern opera by Menotti, and it's about this woman who's kind of a con artist, and she does these seances, and she gets her daughter to be in them, and she gets, this is a mute boy, and when they did it, there's a movie of it, too, and in the original, the mute boy is a dancer, he communicates through dance, but in ours, it was Edwin from Well Strung, and so he played the violin as his voice.
Oh, lovely.
So Donna Drake directed, it was such a great piece. We did it at that Marjorie Dean Theater near Lincoln Center. I used to say, people said, we're in New York. Do you know where Lincoln Center is? We're right down the block. It was great. Yeah. But yeah, that was, you know, falsetto is, it's hard. And it's very easy to mess up if you press too hard. You know?
But did that happen to you, or did you just age out of that vocal
I sort place? Of aged out of that, but I had a couple times in my life where, one time in Provincetown where I had to cancel like 2 weeks of shows. And I remember Rex Reed came to my show many years ago after I'd hurt my voice, and I was still kind of trying to do the shows, and I couldn't really do it. But, you know, it's like, oh, what do? How long do you wait? Do I just adapt? Because the falsetto, my other voice is fine, but my falsetto wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, it's very easy to mess up a falsetto if you don't, you know, if you get too winded because it's not really supported. I mean, it's very difficult.
What about now singing in a lower range? Are there parts in musicals or operas that you crave to play?
Oh god, I don't know. You know, I mean, I've been asked to do the part in Matilda.
Oh yeah.
I mean, by so many people, but I just haven't had the time, you know, and it's been and I would like to do something like that. But you know, it's really at this point in my life I love working by myself. Not by myself, but for myself.
Right. Yeah. Oh god.
You know, you just decide everything, and it's just very, you know, it's hard to do a play and go somewhere and live there for, you know, how many weeks. And, you know, I would do a play in New Orleans, and I have done stuff in New Orleans, but, you know, it's just hard to... I travel so much, I don't think I'd want to put the time in to do that.
Yeah. No, well, it's really, you know, I mean, even Barbara Streisand, I mean, you know, when she hasn't been on Broadway since Funny Girl because of that, you know.
And it is hard. I mean, people don't understand. 8 shows a week is... insane. Yeah. And when I traveled on Broadway on the road in Chicago, they had somebody else do the matinees because they had to bring a cover, and they wanted to keep his vocal chops up. You know, so they let him do it twice. Which, thank God.
Yeah, that sounds better.
I mean, last week here in P-Town, I did 7 shows in a week, and that's crazy. I mean, just, and they're only an hour. I do a funny song in my show called "Working 9 to 10."
Oh, that's so great.
Because it's still just an hour, you know? Right. Like, I did 7... I worked 7 hours this week, you know?
But it's so much more. I mean...
It is, I know, but...
It's really like you have the best of both worlds going in P-Town, though, because you do your solo stuff, and then...
To do a play, yes.
These things that are, you know, a chance for you to... work with other people and create something bigger. And
you know, I just do the plays because I like to do them. I mean, I make more money in a solo show, but I just like to do them. I mean, we have a great time. And, you know, I hired all these younger, like Jinx and Liza. I mean, they're great actors, and they're really talented. So it's fun. You know, before I wanted to do all the leading roles, but now it's great to just let someone else do it.
Right.
You know.
Well, we'd be happy to see you in any of the parts.
Well,
at all.
Thank you. And I do on Thursdays. I do Fight Club at 7:30 and my show at 9. So I have 20 minutes.
Wow!
But it's just like doing a 2-act play.
Sure,
so,
sure.
You know, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Although one, you know, has kicks in it. In my show, I sit on a couch.
Well, I remember. I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago. You guys did the. Was it the 9 to 5 parody that you did?
Yes, that Ryan Landry wrote.
Yeah. And you did like a headstand in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And you stay up there for five minutes or something.
Remember? And I had those breasts that weighed like 50 pounds.
Oh my God.
Which, funny story, after that, during that show, my friend makes costumes for the Today Show. He did. Philip Heckman, who made my costumes, and he was like, can I borrow your breastplate for Matt Lauer? I was like, well, sure. But... I decided, well, I don't, you know, I'm going to get on the plane and I don't want to make sure I lose them because Matt Lauer needs them.
Right.
So I brought them on the plane with me. But when they go through TSA, fake breasts look like a bomb because it's made out of some kind of material that I don't know. And so she had to take it on the bag and she had that wand with the little thing in it and she was going over my nipples.
Oh my God.
I put it online. Video. It's on my Instagram. It's the most I've ever gotten. Funny. Got hundreds of thousands of views. Yeah. Her, and she was, why is she titillizing my nipples.
Like, even fake boobs, like a little, little attention.
She was smiling, though. It's
funny. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, we play a game with all of our guests.
All right.
Which is kind of like Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Yes.
Except it's Dolly Concert Kill. And so we give you three performers, and you choose one that you want to see as Dolly Levi in Hello Dolly.
Okay.
One that you want to see in a concert, in a peak concert utmost powers.
Okay.
And then one that you, you unfortunately will give the axe.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So,
okay.
I mean, I think we have to do Coco Peru.
Coco Peru.
And
Joanne Worley.
Joanne Worley and Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. Joanne Worley is Dolly Levi.
I think she was the understudy or replaced her. I think she did it.
Yeah, really?
That sounds right.
Oh, yeah. My God. But, you know, Coco is kind of like Dolly Levi.
Yeah, I would want to see that.
I'd have to do Coco as Dolly Levi. And I'm sorry to say, I'm going to have to kill Joanne Worley because I'd have to see Barbara Streisand.
Absolutely.
I mean, who wouldn't?
That's
respect. Joanne Worley at her peak is wonderful, but it's not Barbara Streisand.
Right. You must have seen Barbara at some point in concert.
I have not. No.
Well, you know, Richard J. Alexander.
Yes.
He's a huge fan of yours.
Yes, and I just have never been to see Barbara.
Well, we're going to make sure. Richard needs to get you some tickets.
I know. Sure,
yeah, for sure. This needs to happen. Richard.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because there's so many. I mean, you know, I just was watching today the Judy Garland, television show.
Oh, well, that's
the greatest. Be My Guest. You know, I asked, you know, somebody for the music, you know, because I'm doing something with that, but it's just so fun. Well, I mean, it's just
I was going to say you and Jinx should do Happy Days.
Yeah. I did that with Charles Bush when I was the young girl, but now I'm not
pay
the young
forward.
Girl.
Yeah,
yeah, turn the page. We did that Charles Bush show here a long time ago.
That's
you know?
So sweet.
Oh, funny. God.
Well, you are so delightful, and we're so happy to
have you. I'm so glad to be here. What a view. Thank you.
Okay, anytime. Come
enjoy. Oh, I was talking about you guys.
Oh, wow. Daddy. Well, we're so psyched for your show tomorrow.
Farla Jean Merriman on Instagram.
Yes. The greatest follow. If for no other reason, go for the nipple
feel of that.
Stay for everything else. All right. Thank you so much,
Jeff. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week as we continue our special Winter in a Summer Town mini-season, featuring the most fabulous talents from Provincetown and Fire Island.
Next up, four-time Tony nominee Judy Kuhn, who'll be chatting with us live from BroadwayCon.
And after Judy, we'll be closing out the season with Miss Richfield 1981.
This episode was recorded at the fabulous Anchor Inn Beach House in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Visit them online at anchorinnbeachhouse.com. This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer. BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A is an ass.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.